It is Tuesday, September 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Victor Beatty in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly session expresses confidence of another summit with North Korea's leader.
I'm going to be meeting with Chairman Kim in the not-too-distant future. The location is being worked on, the time is being worked on, and we'll be announcing it.
Also ahead, a search for international cooperation against the plague of illicit drugs, and a tribute to the late Nelson Mandela on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump will address the 73rd UN General Assembly session, his second address to the world body, Tuesday. Iran may well be a focus of the remarks. In May, he withdrew the U.S. from the 2015 international nuclear deal with Tehran over what the administration described as its malign behavior. Last week, the U.S. reaffirmed Iran remains the chief state sponsor of terrorism. The president is expected to chair a Security Council meeting Wednesday on nonproliferation. The focus is again expected to be Iran. North Korea was a focus of much of his attention last year and continues to be this year, but in a more positive light following his historic summit with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore. The president Monday met with his South Korean counterpart Moon Jae-in on the sidelines of the UN session.
We've had terrific talks on trade, and we'll be signing in a little while a very important trade agreement with South Korea and the United States, and I think it's a very exciting event. It was a long time in coming, and it's a basic redoing of the agreement that was done before, which was a very unfair agreement for the United States, and I think that President Moon and myself were very happy. It's great for South Korea, it's great for the United States, it's great for both. We also talk, obviously, about North Korea, where we're making tremendous progress. Chairman Kim has been really very open and terrific, frankly, and I think he wants to see something happen. So we have done, I think, mutually, we've done very well with respect to North Korea. And we'll be discussing that during the next couple of days. We'll be certainly discussing it now. But I just want to say it's a great honor to have President Moon with us. And thank you very much, Mr. President, for coming.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. It's a pleasure to see you again 4 months after our meeting in Washington in May. Thanks to your support, I had a great trip to Pyongyang. We reached a good agreement between the two Koreas and achieved progress on denuclearization of North Korea. There was also a message from Chairman Kim that he wanted me to convey to you. And I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to meet you and give you a readout of the discussions I had with Chairman Kim Jong-un immediately after returning from Pyongyang. I hope it will contribute to the efforts to achieve complete denuclearization and peace on the Korean Peninsula, as well as to the U.S.-North Korea dialogue and your second summit with Chairman Kim. In particular, it is hugely significant that Chairman Kim personally expressed his commitment to denuclearization in front of the world media, and that I highlighted once again the denuclearization agreement reached with Chairman Kim in front of the 150,000 citizens of Pyongyang. And now North Korea's decision to relinquish its nuclear program has been officialized to a degree that not even those within North Korea can reverse. Thanks to your bold decision and new approach, we are in the process of solving a problem that no one has been able to solve in the decades past. I'd like to thank you for this, Mr. President. And Chairman Kim also repeatedly conveyed his unwavering trust and expectations for you while expressing his hope to meet you soon to swiftly conclude the denuclearization process with you, because you are indeed the only person who can solve this problem. I look forward to seeing the U.S.-North Korea summit take place and wish you great success. As for the revision of the free trade agreement between our two countries, I believe that it is significant because it means that our alliance is being expanded to the economic realm as well. And I'm very pleased that we have revised this agreement to achieve a freer, fairer, and more mutually beneficial agreement. And through this agreement, I hope that the bilateral economic ties will be promoted even further. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll be having a second summit with Chairman Kim in the not-too-distant future. Secretary of State will be dealing with that subject, but Mike Pompeo has been in touch with them, and
We've been in touch with them, and I think within a fairly pretty short period of time, that'll be announced. It will be location to be determined, but we're both very much looking forward to having it. It will be between North Korea and the United States. It'll be similar to the format we had before, most likely a different location. Again, it will be announced pretty soon. I think a lot of progress is being made. I see tremendous enthusiasm on behalf of Chairman Kim toward making a deal, and I think that that's something that's very good. We are in no rush. There's no hurry. We got back 3 months ago or so. I think we've made more progress than anybody's made in ever, frankly, with regard to North Korea. I really believe North Korea has tremendous economic potential, and I believe that Chairman Kim and the people of North Korea want to see that potential arrived at, and we will help them to that end. And the relationship is very good. In fact, in some ways, it's extraordinary. We'll see what happens, but we will be having a second summit in the not-too-distant future.
President Trump meeting with his South Korean counterpart, Moon Jae-in, who, by the way, spoke through an interpreter, at a meeting Monday on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly session in New York. I spoke earlier with Ken Gause, director of the International Affairs Group of the Research and Analysis Solutions Organization, CNA, based in Arlington, Virginia. He said the two sides still have a very different view of what denuclearization means.
I mean, I know what the United States thinks it means, and that means unilateral North Korean denuclearization. That is not what North Korea believes denuclearization means. And until we have some sort of common agreement on the definition of terms, we're going to continue to go around and around and around this circle. There are indications that North Korea may be willing to give up certain parts of its program, but that's a far cry from complete and verifiable denuclearization.
So there's a wide gap. How can that be bridged?
What you need to do, and I think what President Moon tried to do or is trying to do, is to fold denuclearization into the peace regime process, in which denuclearization becomes a confidence-building measure on the way towards some sort of peace regime and eventual peace treaty. And this way, North Korea can give up some of its program without losing face. Because the problem is right now how it's framed by the United States, it's a zero-sum game. Absolute winners, absolute losers. And North Korea is not going to give up parts of its nuclear program that it has spent billions of dollars and decades building in return for nothing or just some sort of promise that sometime in some distant future they will get some sort of reciprocity. So if you build this into some sort of a peace regime and quit talking about denuclearization, but just make it be one of many confidence-building measures, then there is a possibility that you can make some real progress on this because there is no longer a zero-sum losing face sort of situation that we currently have.
Well, Pompeo indicated he's got patience, and this will be a process.
It will be a process. The question is, what kind of process? If it's a process where North Korea is forced to give up its program first before we begin to give anything in return, I don't think that will work. But if it becomes something where North Korea gives something up, then we get something up, and then North Korea, and then we can make some progress. The question is, how far is North Korea willing to go down that denuclearization road? And that is right now very unclear.
In the summit last week between the two Koreas, Kim promised to dismantle a missile site and a nuclear complex if the U.S. took corresponding action. What might that be?
Well, right now it seems to what President Moon has suggested that it is some sort of declaration of the end of the Korean War, not a peace treaty, but a declaration of end of hostilities between the United States and North Korea so that they could be on a kind of a new sort of frame or plateau of equals and not adversaries. Whether that's enough to get North Korea to completely shut down Yongbyon, you know, that still remains to be seen. But that, I think, President Moon has suggested would be one of probably several things that the United States would have to provide in reciprocity for them to shut down and begin to dismantle Yongbyon. As far as Dongcheong-ri, which is the missile site, That is something that North Korea has promised to do. But again, that's what they promised to do at Singapore, and they have dismantled, you know, a little bit of the test stand, but it's a far cry from being completely dismantled.
What about lifting sanctions?
Lifting sanctions, I think, has to be part of this reciprocity. And I think that's, you know, North Korea has to have something to stay invested in this process. And I think lifting sanctions and security guarantees will be the two things that we have that we could provide that would provide some amount of leverage to get them to give up parts of their program. So I think that has to be on the table.
Ken Gauss, Director of International Affairs of the Research and Analysis Group, CNA. This is VOA's International Edition.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
And among our top stories, U.S. Central Intelligence Agency director says North Korea is serious about denuclearization. World leaders recommit to peace in memory of Nelson Mandela. Liberians take to the streets demanding return of lost millions. President Trump rules out statehood for Puerto Rico while critics remain in office. And prosecutors ask for 10 years prison time for comedian Bill Cosby. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANewsCut.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. Nearly 130 countries signed on to a U.S.-drafted pledge to fight the global drug problem. The non-binding U.S. statement signed at the UN Monday bound countries to develop national action plans to reduce demand for illicit drugs through education, expanding treatment efforts, strengthening international cooperation on justice, law enforcement, and health, as well as cutting off the supply by stopping production.
Thank you all for being here this morning. It is a great honor to address you on an issue that affects every nation across the globe, the world drug problem, and a big problem it is. The scourge of drug addiction continues to claim too many lives in the United States and in nations around the world. Today, we commit to fighting the drug epidemic together. I want to express my deep gratitude to Ambassador Haley for her outstanding leadership in counter narcotics at the United Nations, along with the dedicated work of our great Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who's done an absolutely fantastic job, and Ambassador John Bolton. Thank you very much. We also thank the Secretary General for joining us as our special guest, and as our special guest, he's become a great friend and he's doing a wonderful job at a very, very complex situation, but a beautiful situation. And I've always said the United Nations has tremendous potential, and that potential is being met. Slowly but surely, it's being met. We are likewise grateful to our 31 co-host countries. Each of you is taking critical steps to combat the global drug problem. As the 2018 World Drug Report highlights, cocaine and opium production have hit record highs, credibly, and global deaths caused by drug use has increased by 60% from the year 2000 to 2015. So in 15 years, it's gone up 60%, which is absolutely terrible. As we know, illicit drugs are linked to organized crime, illegal financial flows, corruption and terrorism. It's vital for public health and national security that we fight drug addiction and stop all forms of trafficking and smuggling that provide the financial lifeblood for vicious transnational cartels. In the United States, we're taking aggressive action, securing our borders, supporting law enforcement, devoting record funding to the opioid crisis, and promoting treatment and recovery. Many nations here today are also taking bold action. Newly elected President Duque, Colombia, campaigned on an anti-drug platform and won a very, very impressive victory. Congratulations. We look forward to partnering with his new administration to eradicate cocoa production in his country. All of us must work together to dismantle drug production and defeat drug addiction. For this reason, last month, the United States announced a global call to action on the world drug problem. The call is simple: reduce drug demand, cut off the supply of illicit drugs, expand treatment, and strengthen international cooperation. If we take these steps together, we can save the lives of countless people in all corners of the world. And when I say countless, I'm talking about millions and millions of people. I'm thrilled that every country in the room today has agreed to answer our call, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your commitment to this important initiative. The United States looks forward to working with you to strengthen our communities, protect our families, and deliver a drug-free future for all of our children. Thank you very much, and thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
President Donald Trump, who hosted the event, mentioned opioids, an addiction involving mainly prescription painkillers, heroin, and fentanyl, is a growing U.S. problem. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, opioids were blamed for more than 49,000 deaths last year. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
And this is International Edition. World leaders meeting at the UN Monday look to the late South African President Nelson Mandela's legacy of championing peace, human rights, and global cooperation. They adopted a declaration recommitting to goals of building a peaceful, inclusive, and fair world to revive the values for which Mandela stood by emphasizing human dignity. Gracia Michel is Mandela's widow.
We thank you for having given room and space here in the United Nations precinct to have Nelson Mandela's statue adorn the walls of this building. As South Africans, we are deeply humbled and we are deeply grateful for this wonderful gesture. We are pleased that he will forever not only live in the hearts of South Africans at home, but also live in the hearts of people around the world, and particularly those who continue to come to the United Nations. We thank you for this wonderful gesture.
That obviously not Gracia Michel, but actually South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who was officiating at the unveiling of a statue of Nelson Mandela at the UN, donated by his country to mark the 100th birthday of the former South African leader. Now to the widow of Nelson Mandela, Gracia Michel.
It is time for every leader here to take responsibility. Those who are directly involved in the atrocities plaguing our world, those who take sides, and those who sit in silence. As leaders of this time, you have moral imperative and the ability to bring the death and destructions we witness on a daily basis to an end. Colombia proved it can be done. Others also can follow the example. History will judge you should you stagnate too long in inaction. Humankind will hold you accountable should you allow suffering to continue on your watch.
And Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi attended, calling on nations to unite against terrorism, racism, discrimination, sectarianism, and intolerance. At the statue unveiling of Nelson Mandela, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the statue would remind those who see it of Mandela's enduring values.
The fight against apartheid marks a landmark in human rights and freedom. The credit goes to the people of South Africa. But the United Nations played its role, the role we should be proud of. And so it's more than appropriate that our headquarters should be honored by this statue. And I thank the President and the government of South Africa for its generosity in donating it. From this day on, all delegates, staff, visitors, everybody in the United Nations will be constantly inspired by Madiba's legacy looking at this wonderful statue. Thank you very much.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. This is VOA News.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists led by Johan Brox, an associate professor at the Australian National University, recently studied some fat molecules they had found on an ancient fossil. They say their studies provided evidence that allowed them to identify the fossil animal as a Dickinsonia and that it is the earliest known animal in the geological record. The scientists say the creature lived on Earth about 558 million years ago, which was about 20 million years before the so-called Cambrian explosion of modern animal life. Brox described this event as a time when complex animals and other life forms, like mollusks, worms, sponges, and arthropods, took over the fossil record. Brox and his colleagues described this primitive animal as being oval-shaped with rib-like structures along its body and measuring about 1.4 meters in length. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Lawyers for comedian Bill Cosby and a state-appointed psychologist argued in court Monday over whether he should be considered a sexually violent predator under Pennsylvania state law as his two-day sentencing hearing began over his sexual assault conviction. The 81-year-old Cosby was found guilty in April. Ben Thomas reports.
Bill Cosby arrived at the courthouse in Norristown, Pennsylvania, looking grim this morning as he passed by shouting protesters. He's facing as much as 30 years in prison or as little as probation. The 81-year-old comedian was convicted earlier this year of drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand at his home in 2004. A jury convicted Cosby of three felony counts. Constand is among 60 women to accuse the former Cosby Show star of sexual assault, but the only one to go to trial. Still, prosecutors hope to call some of those other accusers during the two-day hearing to paint Cosby as a sexual predator deserving of prison. I'm Ben Thomas.
New technologies are helping people who are disabled with physical, cognitive, vision, and hearing problems. Some promising new tools include a digital glove that translates sign language and tactile windows for the blind. Here's VOA's Deborah Block.
Inventor Halil Ayoub slips a black glove onto her hand before beginning the familiar swish of sign language. She pushes a button on her wrist, and a small speaker relays the message.
This glove translates sign language into speech to help people who cannot speak.
Ayoub is the inventor of BrightSign.
I am tired.
My dream for BrightSign is to be the extension of the senses for the people who want that kind of technology, who want to voice their feelings and opinions without having to always look for someone to help them out, to give them the independence that they need and the control over their own communication.
She estimates each pair of gloves will cost a few hundred dollars and explains how they work.
So this is called a data glove, which is wired with multiple sensors to track the hand movements. And there are sensors that measure how much your fingers are flexed and bent. And there are sensors here that measure exactly where your hand is in 3D space. And that information is being transferred to a computer chip right here. And once I make a sign language sign, basically I press this button and it translates all of those movements into words that are spoken out through the speaker.
There are also new devices to help the blind. The Ford Motor Company worked with an Italian startup to create a device that helps blind people feel the view outside a car window by turning light into vibrations that, when combined with an audio description, conveys a sense of the scenery passing by. Last year, Microsoft launched its free Seeing L app, which turns a smartphone into a talking camera.
Meet me at Starbucks.
Paul Beppe, who is blind and lives alone, uses the Seeing L app to do things like finding food and drinks.
You've got the empowerment and independence literally in your pocket on your smart device.
Analysts say demand for technology that augments our ability to see and hear the world around us can only grow. Deborah Block, VOA News.
Thank you, Deborah, for that report. And you've been listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Victor Beatty. You can find us at voanews.com and also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Dave Magnus, for making the production possible. Again, I'm Victor Beatty in Washington, and I'm wishing you all the best.
This is Today in History. On September 25, 1066, at the Battle of Stamford Bridge, English forces under King Harold II defeated an invading Norwegian Viking army near York, the beginning of the end of the Scandinavian threat to England. On this day in 1513, Spanish explorer Vasco Núñez de Balboa became the first European known to see the Pacific Ocean from an American shore. In 1555, on this day, following years of turmoil brought on by the Protestant Reformation, the Peace of Augsburg was arranged between the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V, and an alliance of Protestants. That move gave legal status to Lutherans. In 1789, the U.S. Congress adopted 12 amendments to the nation's new constitution and sent them to each state for ratification, a process that took 2 years. 10 of the 12 became the Bill of Rights for all citizens. They included freedom of speech, press, assembly, and religion. In 1911, ground was broken for the construction of the ballpark of the North American Major League Baseball team called the Boston Red Sox. Fenway Park would be completed in time for the 1912 season. Fenway is still in use, the oldest big league ballpark in the United States. In 1919, President Woodrow Wilson collapsed in Pueblo, Colorado, while on a grueling railroad tour seeking popular support for Senate ratification of the Versailles Treaty, including U.S. participation in the League of Nations. Mr. Wilson would suffer a stroke weeks later that would incapacitate him for months. Then in March 1920, the Senate rejected the Versailles Treaty. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.